Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It's called the Victor Leonov. It's just left Irish waters. Patrick Murphy, member of the Irish South and West Fish Producers Organisation. Are you relieved to see the back of it?
Yeah, well, we always concerned when we have foreign vessels coming into our waters, not knowing what they're doing here. We've had this conversation many times.
And what? He's gone now, apparently, but he refused to respond to communications from our naval service. Nothing we can do much about it. We don't even have any people on our ships that can qualify to fire the cannons. Not that we want to start World War III. Are there many ships doing exercises down there, Patrick? Have you noticed?
Well, we were never notified, Joe, but we see vessels and military vessels. We had four French naval vessels in our waters at one stage. So we know that they do a lot of exercises in the Irish Sea and the Celtic Sea and up north. And the UK do a lot of exercises, especially underwater. We've spoken to commanders of, ex-commanders of the British Navy, like that would be going in submarines.
The British, without them, we'd have no protection. Both on land, on sea and air especially. But what about the Russians? Because you spotted them before. You went up to because they didn't they try and implement an exclusion zone. You went up to Rotgar and you met the Russian ambassador, and he was a hail fellow well met, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, well, that was different, Joe. They were actually telling the aviation services to fly over our own area, like, you know, that was a bit cheeky. So when we were told that we too might be allowed to go fishing, we drew the line there. So the fishermen decided to say no, and that we went up and we negotiated, and we did negotiate with them, and they withdrew, and we were very, very happy with that, to be honest with you, because it's a very important fishery and a very important seafloor grounds. You don't want to be trawling with unexploded ordnance, that, you know, what goes up must come down.
Absolutely.
But like, And Joe, I must say now at this juncture, we wouldn't have had half the success with the likes of yourself giving us the platform to let people know what was going on, because it was people power, you know, that did that and all over the world. So thanks very much for that, Joe. And we are delighted as always to talk to you.
And Patrick, and likewise. But if you try and make radio contact with the other ships, regardless of nationality, obviously military ships, do they respond?
Oh, they're obligated to, Joe, yeah, because of navigation hazards, and they have to have AIS on, like, you know, so the boats have to be seen for navigation purposes, all vessels, including fishing vessels. So, like, that's safety at sea, and there's a collision regulation there as well. So, yeah, they are duty-bound to answer you, and if not, then you would be looking for the likes of the military to get involved. Like, you know, you can't have rogue ships coming through your waters. Look, they could be anything. We've had boats coming in with drugs and everything, Joe, coming through our waters from all over the world. So, like, we have, and I keep saying this, Joe, our naval services aren't resourced enough. We are losing very good people out of those services. One of the lads came up to me, he was in the Navy, his generation, three generations, and his nephew was in. And they were actually bought out by a local company in Ringsend. You know, 30 of them, 30 apprentices for electronics, and all their contracts were bought out. So it left a huge gap of services for the naval. And so I'll keep taking the opportunity, Joe, if you don't mind, to say that we really need to support our men and women, and in the other defence forces as well, too, in fairness. They put their lives on the line, Joe. Yeah.
And there's a massive recruitment drive at the minute, and the ads look very exciting, both for Navy, land and air. They look very, so there is a massive recruitment drive, and Jennifer Carl McNeill, when she was in charge of defence in her ministry, the entrance salary went up dramatically, and they're forever trying to get that across to people, but obviously it's not working at this stage, but it seems to be a much better career in our military.ie than it was even 2 or 3 years ago. But as you say, the skills are so high that they're in demand by private companies.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And look, as I said, these are skilled, highly skilled and specialised people. Like, and, you know, we might have to give a bit more, Joe. It's like hiring a consultant over a doctor. You know, the consultant has the better education, the more skill set and everything else. So they deserve to get a bit more. And I say the same for our specialists in these areas. And if you want to keep the talent and the skill that's there, you're going to have to pay for it, like anything.
And Patrick, have you ever, apparently there's ships that have no crew, not the Marie Celeste, but ships that are electronically. Oh, yes. Have you come across them?
Yeah, we have, and we've great concern over them, Joe, because dark nights and everything, fellas are steaming around, you know, in waters, yeah, and these are very close to the surface. They're autonomous vehicles. They're for surveying, Joe, would you believe it, and mapping the seafloor and stuff like that for offshore, all manner of offshore industries. So we are concerned about that, but we have notified the department about that. There's five there at the moment, Joe. That's okay. A lot.
And they run their commercial operations.
Yeah, commercial, Joe.
Okay,
yeah,
they're
yeah,
not
yeah.
military.
Look,
so they'd have to get permission.
Our job. Yes, but we would like it to be a little bit more stringent and a little bit more. I suppose, known to what's going on out there, Joe. Like, you know, we've vessels steaming down there. Before a fishing vessel belonging to our lads leaves port, within a 4-hour window, he has to call into the FMC, Fishery Monitoring Control, in Ringsend, and they have to tell him what time they're leaving, the area they're going to. If they don't manage to leave within the 4 hours, then they have to recall in again.
Okay.
I was explaining this as well. Even passenger ships, Joe, they have to give a time of departure and when they're leaving and call in to let people know that they're en route, you know.
Of course,
I worked in that area myself. So the same goes for anything on the water. We'd be hoping for the same rules to be applied just for safety and marine navigation, you know.
But the fact that this ship, and it's known as a Russian spy ship, was specifically built, the fact that it wouldn't even reply to the Samuel Beckett says a lot, doesn't it? Its silence says a lot, if you pardon the contradiction there.
Yeah.
The silence does say a lot.
It does, and as I said, that's, as you said, we have neighbours next door, so, you know, well, we don't want to escalate anything. I said to you, Joe, we achieve a lot by talking, even if they don't talk to us. I think they did get the hint and they left the water, so that's what you can do, and just monitor them. Our vessels, our boat, fishing boats, keep an eye out all the time, and we constantly get updates, and you have marine traffic. There's apps that you can go onto and you can see ships that have the AIS on. Anybody can have a look at it. It's called the Marine App. And, you know, it's something that people are interested. They could spend a little time and have a look and see all the ships around the place and the different nationalities.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, is there much business these days of oil exploration, gas exploration, going looking at wrecks, galleons, gold, Spanish silver or whatever? Is there much of that going on these days?
I think there's always a bit of it, Joe. We were contacted by one of these treasure ships. I think they found a wreck off the Irish coastline one time. So we were in communication with them. But there's a lot of wrecks around our coastline. And I was actually above with the Irish Lights yesterday, Joe, on a new document that they're after doing for 2025 and 2030. Again, people don't realise the amount of people that are involved in our marine industry. You know, Yvonne Shields now deserves a definite good mention, the CEO of the Irish Lights.
Yeah,
like, and they keep our water safe, keep the lights on. And do you know what, Joe, that wasn't mentioned, and we should give him a shout out for it. During the last storm, not one of the lighthouses lost power. They managed to keep on when power was out all over the place. And in the worst of conditions, out in the Fastnet Rock, where my father-in-law served them many years, Frank Coughlin, you know, they managed to keep the lights on and keep our navigation safe. And they deserve fierce credit, Joe.
Well, we should send Yvonne of Irish Lights, and she's been there leading that fantastic organisation. We should send her over to Heathrow to run Heathrow.
That's it.
They wouldn't.
Do you know,
you
Joe,
said there wasn't one lighthouse during the storm that lost power. Isn't that incredible?
No. And Joe, another one did as well too that I heard yesterday was above an Irish Lights. When the ship ran into the other ship in UK waters, they sent over the Grand Whale to assist them. You know, like, that is cooperation. And again, they never get a mention, Joe, all the crews that are on those boats. And, you know, they're the silent heroes, Joe, looking after our marine environment. So, you know, there's an awful lot of people working in the marine environment that just get on with their jobs. So it's great to give him a mention with yourself.
And Yvonne, I know Yvonne. She's been in. Her full name is, as you know, is Yvonne Shields O'Connor. But joined Irish Lights as chief executive in 2011. So she's been there 14 years. Yeah. I think Heathrow should headhunt her, keep the airport open if she kept all the lighthouses.
No,
going,
Joe, don't be stealing your talent.
if the most vulnerable buildings, and I know they're strong, but obviously lighthouses are there. Their only purpose is to serve, which is fantastic. But well done for mentioning Irish Lights. They do a great job. Okay, well, when are you going back on patrol?
Joe, we're always on patrol. We've our eyes and ears open all the time.
Good
you can
man.
Be assured of this.
I know that, and we're lucky to have you. And above all, safe seafaring, Patrick, in terms of your work. And the storm recently, I presume everyone was safe in port.
Yeah. Well, even so, Joe, you have to get onto your vessels. You have to check them. Unfortunately, in times gone past, we've lost a few lads off the piers and stuff like that. So, you know, you have to be vigilant the whole time. And we're a shrinking community, unfortunately, Joe. We're hoping now, Joe, that anybody that's listening, it's Friday. Go out and buy yourself a nice bit of fish and chips over the weekend.
There's nothing better.
You know,
fresh,
we'd appreciate lovely weather
fresh,
and all to have
fresh Irish fish. God bless you, Patrick, you and your confreres and colleagues in that great community that is the Irish fishing community. That's Patrick Murphy, Irish South and West Fish Producers Organisation. Betty, good afternoon. Betty.
Yes.
This fella had some nerve, hadn't he?
Yes, he had indeed. Quite a bit of nerve, all right, but thank God it was no worse.
Okay, tell us what happened. Like so many, you're getting the, as we're all encouraged to do, you're getting the house insulated with the scaffolding on the outside. So the scaffolding goes up. What happened?
The scaffolding has been up for some time and work has been going on for some time.
Right.
It's down now anyway. But there was a knock at the door and this man came and said his name was Patrick.
Yeah.
And he said he had a job to do on the vent in the bathroom.
Okay.
And I just let him in.
And was he, what did he present as a workman? Did he have a machine or a drill or hammers or?
Yeah, he had a tray that he used for painting, and he had a drill on that and some smaller tools, I think a screwdriver and things.
Okay. So when he comes, you thought he'd something to do with the scaffolding. In he comes.
I thought, but he came in and we have a bathroom, our normal bathroom downstairs.
Right.
So I brought him through and showed him the bathroom. And he said, no, it's an upstairs.
Nah.
Have you got an upstairs? I said, we've a small ensuite, but I don't think there's a vent there or anything.
Okay.
And he said, I have to correct the vent. I better check or something like that.
He was pretty persistent.
Yeah. He said he had a job to do there. And I pointed him up the stairs and told him to go to the front room.
Okay.
And my husband was in the sitting room as he came through, back through the sitting room, sitting on the armchair. And as he went up the stairs, my son came out of the back room to go down the stairs and met him. And he told him that he's from the SE scheme and he was checking the vent.
Okay.
And he continued on up the stairs and my son continued on down the stairs. And I said to my son then when he came out to the kitchen, I wonder what he's doing up there because the vent we have goes up into the attic.
Okay.
They didn't have anything to do with that vent. We've had that for years. So, anyway, my son went back up the stairs and I went up after him. In the meantime, we'd heard a bit of drilling.
All right.
And...
And he didn't... And Betty, when... This fella has some neck. This I know the name Pat is made up. Obviously, there's a million Pats in Ireland. But he has some neck. He wasn't... One, he persisted in going, persuading you to let him go upstairs. Two, he saw the scaffolding. He said, I'm part of the scaffolding job. Let me... I need to go upstairs. You said, what do you need? He said, oh, there is a vent. You so like him. But anyway, he persisted. Your son then comes out of the bedroom. And that didn't bother him either. He kept going.
Yeah, he kept going.
Oh, my God.
And we heard the drill then.
Yeah, well, he just turned it on, obviously, to make a sound.
Yeah, possibly. Or he, afterwards, we were told they could have just drilled into the floorboards up there or something. Anyway, we didn't see any sign of anything like that.
Of course.
So, my son went back upstairs ahead of me, and I went up to see what he was actually doing.
Yeah.
And he was gone. He was just gone.
Oh, he has some neck. So, how did he get out of the house? Do we know how he got out?
Through the front door. He came down the stairs, obviously, and out the front door again, the way he came in.
And like the Russian ship, he was gone. Disappeared. Not a buy or leave. And
so immediately I checked the bedroom.
Yeah, well done.
And was nothing disturbed, nothing missing. And I said, it must have been that he was a chancer. And seeing the two men in the house, my husband and my son, changed his mind on it, you know.
And was there any sign, Betty, when he saw your son come out of the bed? What age is your boy?
He's a grown lad.
Grown lad, okay, better. Yeah. When he saw the grown lad coming out of the house, when he saw your husband in the front room, when he saw you were in fair play to you were suspicious of him. You think he might have got rattled, and as soon as he was on his own,
eventually I was suspicious of him. But I should have known, because any time that the SEAI scheme were coming to do any job, they'd tell us the day before and say, it'll be an early call, it'll be an afternoon call or whatever.
Yeah.
And they often would tell us the name of the person who would be doing it. And they were mostly foreign people. But this was an Irish chap.
And did he wear a baseball hat? Did he try and cover his face?
He had a baseball hat.
And
he had longish hair onto his shoulders. Very untidy looking. And fringed down in his eyes.
Okay. And then you rang the... You knew, you suspected now he was a chancer.
Yeah, well, I thought when he skedaddled so quick...
Yeah.
That was something amiss, you know.
So did you ring the company?
I tried ringing, I couldn't get through.
Okay.
But the man was to come from it in the afternoon. We had been told that the man would be coming to do a snag lift.
Oh, yeah.
One of the bosses. So he came and I asked him... about this fellow, was he sent out? And he said, no, I'll check with him, he said. And he checked the boss of the work that they were doing our house. And he said, no, nobody was sent out to do anything like that.
No, of course not.
And so I rang the police then.
Oh, well done, Betty, well done.
And told them what happened. And they said they'd send a car around the area and keep tabs on around the area. Because I told them there was other people with scaffolding around the area too. And most of them are older folk like myself.
Yeah, no?
So,
But I hope they're all as smart as you are, Betty. Well done. Because
I felt I wasn't very smart.
You were. Hang on. He scoped out. He went up to the bedroom. he had, I reckon, he turned on the drill as he walked in just for to create the effect or whatever. You yourself, your son and your husband, Greg, said, hang on, what's the drilling? He probably heard your son coming up the stairs and he disappeared.
He didn't pass down the stairs. He was already gone. He would have had to pass us on the stairs.
Unbelievable.
And my son went up ahead of me and I went up after him to see what was going on. And he was gone now.
Of course he was.
I opened the door and was nobody in our cul-de-sac or anything, so he had skedaddled when he saw the male present, I suppose.
Yeah, he was some chancer, some neck.
Yeah.
And Betty, you not only did you ring the company, not only did you ring the guards, which is brilliant, you also went around, did you go around your neighbours and tell them?
I went around to a few people who had scaffolding.
Yeah, well done.
To let them know. But I didn't get answers at all the doors, you know, so...
Well, you did. You made the effort. Well done. Well done. And by the way, Betty...
I told my sister and she said that we should contact Joe Duffy, so I left the door to do that.
And Betty, was there any... Did he drill anything up in the bedroom? Did you find any holes?
No, there was no sign of anything like that.
Of course not. You know? Now, when will your insulation be finished? Is it finished?
It's finished.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. And if you want the heat's so strong.
And the scaffolding is gone And the heating is great. We had some very cold nights and we didn't have to keep the heat on for long at
all. Brilliant. Makes all the difference. But you see, Betty, what he's doing, there could be a few of them now, he's mooching around. He's looking out for anyone getting any work done. It could be scaffolding, it could be the driveway, it could be Philip, and he's taking his chances, knocking on the door and saying, I need to get into the house to check something upstairs. You obviously know there's work going on in the house, and you presume. So do you think you had a lucky escape?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Betty, you know, when you said we'll go up the stairs, we heard him drilling, just yourself and your son. Were you not nervous going up the stairs?
Not really, no. Okay, I just wanted to know what was going on.
But
we have a vent in that bathroom, but it goes up into the attic, and that's there years.
Yeah, I know.
So there was nothing to do with the work that was going on.
They all ring ahead or drop you a note or whatever, and they all have an ID. You can ring the number on the ID and they don't mind to double check it's them.
No, don't mind at all.
And of course they don't. Now, Betty, now that you know he was a gurrier, he was a chancer, he was trying to rob, looking back on it, did you say, oh my God, I was going to go up the stairs? What would have happened if you've gone into your bedroom and there he was rifling through your jewellery box or whatever? You would have got a fright. You would have got a fright.
I would have fallen. Okay. Right,
have you ever had a break in before?
Years ago, when the kids were small.
Okay.
The kitchen window one time. A long time ago.
Oh, well, mind yourself, Betty. Yeah. I'm glad there's three of you in the house. It's a great warning to other people as well. Seriously, it's a great warning to other people. You're very good.
That's why my sister suggested that we warn other people, you know.
Well done. Will you look after yourself? How's your husband? How's he keeping?
He's keeping grand, thank God.
Okay, and how are you? You sound great.
I'm okay. I'd say
if he was up in that bedroom, Betty, and you had gone back in, you would have let a roar out at him and he would have scarpered.
He'd be frightened of me, all 5 foot of me.
Get out of my house. Get out of my house, you bousy. Okay, Betty, mind yourself, Petal. You're great, and you're great for ringing the company, you're great for ringing the guards, and you're great for going around the neighbours, and you're great for talking to us. Look after yourself, Betty. Enjoy the rest of the heat over the weekend, and then you'll see your insulation kicking in when it gets colder again next week. Mind yourself and your husband and your son. You're a great trio. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Marie O'Connell, Marie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe. It's great to chat with you.
You took your time.
Do you think so?
Oh, you did.
There's no need to be rushing into things, Joe.
Many years ago was it since you were on with me?
Well, I was on 2 years ago with you.
Okay.
Yeah, on your book show.
Yeah, okay. And your book was called Third Time Lucky.
It was, yes. A book about online dating. So it was Third Time Lucky at Table L2. And Table L2 is in Pontevecchio and Killaloe. So it was about finding love, online dating, Joe. Yeah.
Okay, so go back to when you started. First time dating, you say, 2010.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I know it goes back, doesn't it? Yeah, I was happily married for 20 years and have three lovely children, but it just didn't work out for us. So then, I had a few years in between and it was time to meet somebody.
Yeah.
And 2010 was probably the first time I went online and I was very wary of it, putting myself out there, you know. It's not that I'm confident enough, but you become very vulnerable when you put yourself online like that.
Well, I did,
and I was a small bit foolish the first time round on it, in that I was very flattered by anyone who gave me attention. So I went off and must have made 1,610 Joe dates, you know. Wow. Went on a lot of dates, but I did meet somebody, nice man, and we were together about 5 years, but it was long distance. And I suppose it was maybe 1.5 years out of the five we met, you know. But it suited both of us at the time, and it was never going to be the one.
How many dates again did you go on?
I was pulling your leg.
I know you were. You went on a lot of.
I went on a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
And
did you have little protocols, little guidelines?
You see, the first time I hadn't, Joe.
Okay.
But then I got a bit wiser the second time I went on, which was in about 2015.
Right.
And I went on then, and I narrowed my my criteria, let's say. So they give you options as to what you're looking for.
Okay.
And so I narrowed the age gap a wee bit. I kind of left it open the first time round. So I narrowed it a wee bit. And I did meet a nice man, to be honest. But he was a widower. And he wasn't really ready, I think, myself. But also, he wasn't that into me either, Joe. Sometimes it happens, you know.
That's life.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember when you also gave me guidelines about, like, the first date should be a coffee.
Oh, yeah. So, like, definitely those guidelines got better as I went along.
Okay.
So the first time, second time, I had him down pat by the third time I went online.
And what are they? Only meet him for a coffee.
I would say a coffee. Now, sometimes people can't meet for a coffee during the day, but maybe an early evening drink. But never, I wouldn't meet for dinner on a first date.
Okay.
Because you need to meet somebody first to be sure that there's some kind of connection that's worth exploring the next time round.
Okay.
And if you're only having a coffee, you're only committed to like a half an hour, whatever. Because they might be into you, you might be into them, you know, it depends.
And do you try and get there first?
I always got there first, Joe, to sit in the corner to see who was coming towards me. And also it was a safety factor, you know, I was able to sit in an area where I felt secure.
Ah.
Most of my dates, I have to say, were in Pontevecchio. I remember one of the staff there saying to me at one stage, it's like a conveyor belt in here, Mary. So I would sit at the same table and look out the window, and you could see you know, if there was somebody coming towards you. And then you were always at the advantage, you know, near enough to the exit, so that if you had to leave, you could leave in a hurry. But I say that tongue-in-cheek now, Joe, but I also kind of mean it, because if the person wasn't who you wanted to be, I always gave them the time, let's say, because they were giving you the time. So they were worth your time at least. Even if you knew within 5 minutes it was time to go, you just finish your coffee, have the chat, and it was nice meeting them, but really you didn't feel that... a second date would be on the cards.
Okay, I'm talking to Mary about internet dating. 51551, if you want to ask her questions, 0818715815, joe@rt.ie. Now, I would have thought that I would not get there first. I would wait until he was seated and I'd pick a coffee place to meet him or whatever, where I could see him from outside. And decide not to go in.
Oh, no, Joe. You couldn't do that to somebody. Okay. No. Like, you wouldn't want somebody to do that to you and not turn up. It did happen to me once or twice where they didn't turn up, you know. And maybe they did see me sitting there and take off. Who knows? I don't know. But you wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do that to somebody, not if they were after taking the time. Okay. And remember, you've been online, so you've had a wee chat with them beforehand. Okay. So you've had the banter online. And another thing, Joe, before you arrange to meet, always chat on the phone. Okay. Because you get a very good sense of who somebody is over the phone.
And what about photographs? Are they accurate?
That's one of my biggies, right, when I put in the book, please have a recent photograph. And sorry, men, but you're dreadful at putting up photographs because maybe you haven't taken one in years, but it could be 10 years old. That's not representative of who you are right now, you know? Yeah. It's just, I would say, Joe, a recent photograph and a recent, put your best self forward, a nice photograph of yourself smiling, and please forget the topless ones, you know.
If you want
to exchange them later on, that's
fine. What do you mean, the topless ones? These are fellas with no hats on.
Yeah, Joe, exactly. Yeah, you know exactly what I mean. Showing the pecs, no. Keep that for later on. I'd say put yourself foot forward. Put the best photo up. Put a recent photo up. Remember, you're going to be meeting them.
Okay.
So they're going to see what you look like, you know.
So how soon after arriving do you get the feeling that this has possibilities rather than no possibilities?
Right. Well, I mean, there has to be an attraction there. But for me, attraction is never immediate. It's always getting to know the person first. But you kind of know, don't you, Joe, that if you're going to like somebody when they're having the conversation is flowing within 10 minutes, I would say you'd have a very good idea.
I'm hardly a day goes by when I don't meet someone who's a couple who've met through internet dating, including yesterday I met a couple who met through internet dating. But it is getting more and more popular, isn't it?
But I think it's probably the only way now. I mean, I can't talk for the younger people.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I can't talk for younger people, but I know for us age group, my age group, it is, I told out there early, 50s to 60s, okay? And our age group, it's very hard to walk into a pub. I've no problem walking into a pub and sitting there if I know I'm meeting somebody in a while, you know. But it's, you don't meet somebody, especially locally, because they all know who you are. You know who they are.
Okay.
And if you were going to meet them, you'd have met them already. It might be a bit better in urban areas.
That's a good point. Don't go for a local, because if you were going to meet them, you would have met them already.
You would have met them already. Having said that, my third time lucky was living locally.
Well, tell me, go back to the story about the fella on the escalator.
Okay, so this was one, like, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of disasters. There's a lot of comical stories in the book, Third Time Lucky, anyone looking for us, buythebook.ie. It's on there, or in Pontevecchio and Killaloe. But
and just to remind, just let me remind listeners that Pontevecchio, people think it's they obviously think it's one of the...
A bridge, yeah.
In Italy. And it's not a novel. Pontevecchio is a cafe, beautiful cafe and restaurant in Killaloe,
where
you used to base yourself. And there was a...
I'm still basing myself there, Joe. But anyway,
so the
pizza and wine bar and coffee. So I was at work one day.
Yeah,
yeah, I was at work one day, and this gentleman messaged, and the banter was great because I had one or two of my colleagues, and we were checking the profile, and we were looking, and we were saying, "Oh yeah, sounds good, sounds great." The photograph was nice, and I thought, okay, he has all his teeth and his nice head of hair and he's well-dressed. So that was all good. So I went to meet him. And I went to meet him in Limerick this time, actually, because I was working in Limerick and he was from Cork.
Right.
And he drove up. So I was going up an escalator at one side and I saw this man coming down, staring at me on the other side at the escalator. And I looked and he looked and he waved at me. And I thought, God, I must know him. Is he like he could be a friend of my dad's or something? I couldn't figure out who it was. The next thing, he was on the bottom of the escalator coming back up after me. So I went in to sit down to be first there to meet, and over he comes.
Oh, good luck.
And
how come you didn't recognise him?
I didn't recognise him because, first of all, the hair was gone, which I don't have a problem with. I like bald men. But in his photograph, it was there. In his photograph, he was looked about 50, but this gentleman was in his early 70s.
Okay.
So, it wasn't a match for me, let's just say. Because if you're, be age appropriate, I would say, Joe. Mm-hmm. I was about 50 at that stage. So try to be age appropriate. But it is funny because I more than once met somebody that didn't represent who they were. And I have to say that I'm quite authentic in myself.
You sound it. And so you were hoping he had kept going up the escalator and you had kept going down.
Well, it would have made it easier to just, he was a nice man and had a chat, but it would have been easier if he kept going. So I wouldn't have had to say, oh, I'm really sorry. No, I can't meet you again. And it was my own fault, Joe, because I had said age was not a problem on my profile.
Okay. So where are we now? Give me good news. It's Friday.
It's Friday, Joe, and it's very good news. You asked me last time when I spoke to you on the phone about my third time lucky.
Yeah.
So, you asked me, was I still with him? Because he had a moustache and I had a little thing about... let's just say I've warmed to it over the years. I've warmed to the moustache.
Oh, to the mark,
His name is Kerry. And
Kerry.
Rush. Kerry, he's from Cork, but he's called Kerry.
And is he gold?
He's gold. He is gold. He's not perfect. I'm not perfect, but we're perfect together. Does that sound magic. Very romantic now?
Yes.
Yeah. So he moved in we moved in together before Christmas last year.
Congratulations.
And we got engaged last Friday.
Ah.
So there is the good news. The happy ending. The final chapter,
Joe. When you say to your friends, you call him your boyfriend, your chap.
Well, you see, that was the I had a big problem with that. And I was introducing to people, I did not like the word partner. It sounded like I was in business with him, And it's not what you want to say. And at a certain age, you're not going to say, this is my lover, So even though it felt that, maybe I should say that, boyfriend you can't say. So this is my friend, Kerry. This is my special friend. I don't know. It's now I can say here's my fiance, Kerry.
Beautiful. Yeah. And was there rings exchange or a ring, as they say?
Yes. Yeah. he's probably listening to the radio now. There was a ring exchanged. I was the one who got the ring. Maybe he should get one too now that you mention it, Joe.
Okay.
Maybe that would be, I'm all into equality, so that would only
very
be fair,
well,
wouldn't it?
Mary, I'm just thinking, like, what about the phrase, he's my significant other? Is that a phrase?
No, and I don't like my
other half,
either.
Yeah.
I don't like that either, because I'm whole all by myself, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even though, like, he's enhanced my whole self, but no, I don't like, I don't, and that makes me sound very pernickety now, but yeah, no, he's my Kerry, maybe, I could say that, you know.
But how soon after meeting him, meeting Kerry?
Yeah.
Did you realise that this has possibilities?
Yeah. Like, I passed his photograph out a few times online because he had a moustache. And then I was writing the book.
Yeah.
And the advice I was giving people was to, like, look deeper.
And the moustache. Look under the moustache.
Yeah, look deeper at people rather than the look you're looking for.
What have you got against moustaches? Like, some of the most handsome men, Tom Selleck, Dick Spring, all these handsome men had moustaches.
Yeah. David Jason, But you know what, Joe? I have no problem with this anymore.
No, okay,
none.
Thank God.
I don't know where that fixation came from.
If Kerry decided to go the full hog and grow a beard.
Yeah, no, I like beards.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny that I know it's just a little thing, but no, his moustache suits him now. We leave him alone.
And
He's had it a long time.
Is it a Tom Selleck style moustache? Is it a full moustache? Or is it one of those moustaches where the head of the pint sits on
no.
it?
No, Joe, we'd have
stop.
A problem with that.
Torture
no,
would.
The scissors
the
scissors would have to come out, Joe. Like a kind of a David Jason type.
Okay,
you
but
know.
It's not a strainer moustache.
No. So we're happy enough. And Joe, I'll just tell you quickly.
Okay.
So the first time I messaged him then was early COVID times, so I had to stay local.
We forget about that. The COVID.
We do, yeah.
Infected so
19. It was 2020, and it was a time when the restrictions had been lifted and we were all able to go within our own county or walk around or whatever. And one day I was coming home from work and I was sitting in the car opposite another restaurant, Goozer's restaurant in Ballina. And I had the car window down and I could hear, I was waiting to wave at the owner of the restaurant. He was standing out at the door and I heard him saying, "Oh, hi, Kerry." And I said, there can't be more than, you know, one male Kerry in this area.
Yeah.
So I looked around and I saw this very nice, well-dressed gentleman talking to the owner of Goozer's. They seem to be having a pleasant conversation. So I said to myself, well, he's friendly and he knows the restaurant owner.
Yeah.
So he likes to eat out. I like to eat out and he seems friendly. So I watched him in my rear view mirror as he walked away. Walked away, Joe. And he was dressed very well. And I went straight home. I sent him a message. We met the following week for a coffee. That time then you had to be, you know, what was it, 2 metres apart or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Well, social distancing and everything, yeah.
Yeah, we went for walks and we got to know each other
slowly.
And well, and
are you going to update the book?
I'll have to, won't I? I'll have to update
your tips
the book.
Your tips are great.
Trend
okay,
send a few out there.
And it's early yet. Any future plans?
We're going to have an engagement party.
Oh, very
that's
good.
What we're going to do.
Okay.
We have between us. I have 3 children. He has 3 children.
Brilliant.
And they're dotted around the world.
Okay.
So we're going to have an engagement party for close family and our very close friends locally. And if we decide to get married, we'll probably run away, Joe.
Okay. Will you take your time?
We did the big, you know, we did the big thing years ago. So, well, we're old enough now to just do our own thing.
Take your time. Well done.
Yeah.
Well, good health to you and Kerry. And
thanks, Joe.
Many more years of happiness, and I'm sure other people have stories about there. Because I think you're dead right, Mary, that the vast majority of people now meet online.
They really do, and it is a scary place. It is a scary place for people, and you do meet all sorts on there. It's all about being prepared, doing your research beforehand, and before long you can become a relationship detective.
Oh, great.
You get very good at it. Just get the practice in.
Okay, well done. Look after yourself, Mary. Come here. Hang on. Marion Basto. Yeah. Marion in Malahide.
Hello, Joe,
in Dublin.
Good afternoon.
You're listening to Mary O'Connell.
Yeah, listen to that piece there. Yeah, laughing a bit, but yeah.
And what do you call your what do you call your chap?
I call my he's not a partner, not a boyfriend. I call him my playmate.
Oh, lovely.
And oh, when I like people that ask, one now. I never heard that before. Yeah.
And, that's my own makeup of it. Because
and Marion,
we're too old to be boyfriends and girlfriends.
There you go.
We go here and there, not all that often, but I still call him my playmate.
And
I like that.
It's become a standing joke at this stage.
And do you say to your playmate, Marion, of an evening, after a few glasses, do you fancy a play date?
No, not really. No, we're not in that kind of. Well, I won't say we're not in that league, but we've both had health issues, and side of it is no longer so important.
Okay, and as you say, you said to me there, you're in your 70s, but I think that's
There's plenty
of life left in you. And would you?
Oh,
would
sure
you?
I know,
but
yeah.
Marion,
like when you've had a series of illnesses,
please
and operations,
God, I know,
it's
I know.
Cut you cut off. Like you don't really be the same. And he's in his 70s as well.
Marion, don't be saying bits cut out and bits cut off. Marion,
tell it like it is.
When you're out with your buddies, with your friends, with your girlfriends or whatever, do you refer to him as your playmate?
They know him by his name.
Okay.
You know, but it's just people that you might meet or, you know, and they'd say, what's the connection? And I would say, this is my playmate. And then they either break down in laughter or they just shut up with their mouths open.
Yeah.
Well, Marion, I have to say, I like that. I wish I'd thought of that one.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah.
It's very good. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It is.
Okay.
And well done, Marion. You sound a lot younger.
I'm speechless. Mind yourselves, the two of you. Thank you, Marion. Thank you, Mary. Good luck, Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Let's go, Dave. The clock is ticking. You lost a banner. Roger Caseman Summer School. When did you lose it? Where did you lose it? Quickly.
I lost it going on the train from Houston Station to Tralee. I lost it on Saturday, the 5th of April, last Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was on the 7 o'clock morning, early morning train.
Yes.
And like an absolute idiot, I with a companion, I walked off at Mallow to go for Tralee, and I left our precious banner.
And it is a big banner. It's the length nearly of, I've seen a photograph of it, it's the length nearly of a car parking space. What's it made from, of?
I think it's kind of plastic.
Sturdy.
Yeah. Oh, sturdy, yeah. And it's waterproof. That's the main thing. You can leave it out. And it's useful to us. You know, when we have an event, we have it on the railing.
You're a voluntary organisation. And it has eyelets in it for putting your rope or your string through to hang it, isn't that correct?
Yeah, from the cable ties. You know, the cable ties will tie it to the railing.
And what's written on the banner, Dave?
The Roger Caseman Summer School.
Okay,
that was written on.
So.
We have it. We can sometimes add a sort of a small square with details of the latest summer school.
Okay.
You know, when it's happening and all that sort of stuff.
But the thing about it is, it's professionally done.
It certainly is.
That's what I meant. We
got it done by a local guy in Dunleary, Exactoprint, Philip Marr, and he had a workshop up in Killiney.
Okay.
And not only was Philip working on it, and I went to the workshop, but Philip's mother was working on it, and she was operating the machinery. And
now I think we're going. I think we're going to tweet the photograph of it to see can we help you find it. I know it's a bit.
It
costs you money to replace as well, and but it was in the overhead carrier, right, so to speak. Would it be heavy to lift?
It wouldn't be heavy. Okay. It wouldn't be all that heavy. But the thing is that it's the blank side that it's rolled up in, and so it's the same colour as the bulkhead on the train.
Have Ian Rod Aaron checked the bulkhead?
I've had conversations with both Houston and Kent stations, lost property. I have a friend of mine has a theory that it could still be on a train. There's six or eight trains go up and down to Dublin and Cork.
It could still be on that.
I had a friend travelling on one of the trains, and they checked out a coach D seat 38. They did all that, and no luck. So we've really been trying our best to get banner back.
Well, are you thinking there's so much rolling stock in Ian Rod Éireann, and thankfully, and it's getting better and better. The new darts are on the run at the minute, being tested. They look absolutely fantastic. I've seen them. Do you think maybe the carriage that was in, that could be sitting in Inchicore Works, being cleaned or maintained or whatever? Because of the colour, there's a bit of a camouflage effect, you might not notice this big banner.
That's a good point, Joe. Okay. I have spoke to a good few employees of Ian Rod Éireann, and they've said that there's sometimes they're rerouted.
But
I've had instruction from them, and they said that all their stations are informed about the banner.
Okay.
And
let's try and get it back. Let's try and get it out for everyone.
Thanks.
Travelling on a train this weekend, would you look up, as he used to say in Aer Lingus? But this is Ian Rod Éireann, and you've Roger Casement only up at his grave the other day, when he was reinterred in Glasnevin. A lot of people. He is their hero for his incredible human rights work across the world, be it in Africa or South America.
Absolutely.
When did you become interested in him?
A good few years. I was a fan of Casement, and then I learned that locally in Dunleary they were running after the 2016 centenary year, that they ran a summer school. So I helped out and I joined the committee.
Well done.
And then I was landed with the chairmanship of it. So this is my fourth summer school coming up. And when we were on the train heading down, we were heading for Tralee and taken from Tralee to Ardfert, where we met the Ardfert Historical Society at a beautiful place, which is the Casement Fort.
Oh, magic, yeah.
At one time known as McKenna's Fort.
Okay.
But it's a ring fort surrounded by trees, just a lovely area. And we had a lovely exchange of views about Casement. And you'd be surprised at how much is known by local people about the whole story of Casement. And actually, there's a story about the Casement, which I don't think is...
Say again, you broke up there, David. Say again. There's a story about what?
I said there's a story about the Kerry connection with Casement.
Yeah, OK. Well,
just briefly, the story is, and it was Martin Ferris, the former TD, who told me about it, but He said that, you see, when Casement was arrested, there was a possibility that he'd be executed in Dublin. But then they decided, under pressure, they decided to take him across to London, and he had this very famous trial.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, at the trial in the Old Bailey, a number of people from Ardfert and Kerry were brought over and were witnesses in the trial.
Yeah.
Like, there was a servant girl, and there was various other people just saying, oh, we saw this man, and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And four or five people from the locality, and they all participated in the trial. And when they came home, and as Casement's fame, increased...
Yeah.
People turned against them. There was an animus against them, and the words that was used about them was that they were the Casement hangers. But these were entirely innocent people, and Martin has been quite persuasive in defending these people. And we heard stories about how one person went to New Zealand, and another person had a hard time in school and all the rest of it. So I think Dick Spring actually spoke about this in 2016. It's an issue in locally. And we'll be having a discussion about the Kerry connection in our summer school this year, among a lot of other.
Well, in lieu of the banner, tell us about the dates and what you want to advertise. Please use about the summer school, yeah. Given that the banner has gone
right. Well,
gone AWOL.
The summer school will start on Friday the 25th of this month. Okay. It will be in the Ablana Club in Dunleary. Okay. Our first session will be about the Higgins presidency from 2011.
Wonderful.
It's being given by Tony Heffernan, who was the media director.
Great, long experienced.
Long experience
in political affairs.
Now, we've a lot of stuff happening on the Saturday morning. That will be the 26th of April, including the Kerry connection I spoke about and a session on progress to a united Ireland, and we run a competition, an essay competition, so that every year the winner of the essay competition reads out their essay. We'll have that, but in the afternoon the big focus will be on Ireland's relationship with the Congo and Caitlin's role in that.
Fascinating.
So we're bringing a politician, a senior opposition politician from the Congo. And he himself and his wife will be coming, and they'll be interviewed by Patrick Smith of the Irish Times.
Yeah, no, Patrick. Yeah.
And we'll also have a book launch. Now this year we're really pulling out the stops in the sense that in the evening we have brought a Congolese musician who's very well known, who plays African reggae, Fabienne. We're bringing him from Brussels, and he will. Perform, but we're also having the Keela band, a very top Irish band, and they're going to play Irish music, but to a rhythm that you can dance to. So it'll be a good dance occasion, and it will be very much. There'll be a big emphasis on social inclusion. We want plenty of people from the Congolese community. We want plenty of people from all the other immigrant communities as well, of course, as local.
Keep looking for the banner. You mentioned the winner of the essay competition. We are very proud here today on Liveline because one of the Liveline team, Caroline Bracken, she's a call taker along with Mary Rose and Jason and Shannon and Mary McLaughlin used to be there as well. Caroline has just won a major award. She's the winner of the Poetry Business International Book and Pamphlet Prize. It's a book of poetry that Caroline has written. And I think in every workplace, factory, school or whatever, there are people sitting beside us today that we don't know have these incredible hidden talents. And Caroline Bracken has an incredible talent, but she's a great work colleague. She's a call taker, as I say. She probably talks to more people on the phone and Liveline every day than I do. Her book of poetry is called By Mother. And I'll just read out what Jane Clark, the esteemed Irish poet who was the judge, wrote about it. By Mother is a deeply moving exploration of a mother's relationship with her son who has a long-term mental illness. In innovative forms, the poems evoke the day-to-day depredations of illness, psychiatric treatment and societal attitudes. And yet the thread that runs through the collection is love. So congratulations, Carol. She's on her way. Wait for this, Dave. She's on her way over to Cumbria, as we speak, with her family to the Wordsworth Centre. Would you believe? Ooh. Where tomorrow she will receive this award. And if you look up the website Smith Doorstop, and it's supported by the Arts Council in England, Smith's Doorstop, that'll let you get the book. So anyway, we hope we can find a banner for you, Dave. And best of
great.
Luck.
I really
best
appreciate
of luck.
The help.
Yeah. Best yeah. of luck with yeah. it. It's a great, I just, people like yourself who do, especially with history and reminding us, and we're learning from history, do an incredible, incredible service. So well done. That's Dave Alvey, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to internet dating and Maori's point, which she said she thinks most people who meet today meet online, so to speak. Noel Cody is in Kilkenny. 51551 is the text number. Noel, you were a non-denominational wedding celebrant. What can you tell us?
Hi, Joe. How are you? Lovely to speak to you. I am a non-denominational wedding solemniser, which means I can do legal weddings.
Okay.
And yes, I would see that most couples, regardless of their age profile, now meet online.
Wow.
And there's an interesting thing your caller said earlier about during COVID. Lots of couples who met during COVID would tell me that they actually had a wonderful time because there was no distraction. They were able to speak to each other.
Yeah.
They were able to meet even in the social distancing.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
people didn't quite social distance enough. But and they got to know each other because there was no distractions. They weren't going out. They weren't meeting with friends. And they actually developed a great relationship just being together as a couple.
And when you say there was no distractions, it meant you could, if you were talking online, you could spend hours talking.
You could spend
you weren't
hours
rushing.
Talking,
you weren't rushing anywhere.
No, you weren't. No, you were out for a walk, holding hands and chatting to each other. And there's no distraction, as in having to, you know, meet with other couples.
Yeah,
and, you know, so, yes, that was, we come through a lot.
And
but, yes, I think
okay,
Noel,
well, then
take us,
do they get engaged? Do they get married? Do they have a wedding?
Oh, yeah, of course they do. Yeah, people.
Well, I thought
the
same thing. Our engagement's not dying out, no? Are they?
Oh, no, Joe.
Are they? Okay.
Engagements are great. Engagements are wonderful. And there's always a lovely story involved in engagement.
Okay.
As to how it's done or who proposed and what happened as the proposed. There were hilarious stories about engagements themselves.
And how big are the weddings these days?
Yeah, we're beginning to see a trend in what we're calling, what I'm calling micro weddings, which are small weddings.
Micro weddings.
For people.
Okay.
Yes. Where a couple, maybe they've been together a long time, have grown up children, maybe not, and they have a small wedding with maybe 15 or 20 people at the wedding ceremony, and then they go out for something to eat. It's happened several times for me now recently in restaurants, beautiful restaurants in Kilkenny, and then later on in the evening they have a big party for friends and family, friends and other family.
And
it seems to work out very well.
And well, as you say, sometimes the second time round, do you, in your conversation with the couple beforehand, do you have to tread a diplomatic line? Do you have to say to them, in your own formative words, is there anything you don't want me to mention?
Oh, absolutely, Joe.
Well done.
Any discussion
well
I would have with the couple, they know exactly, almost, what I'm going to say during the ceremony.
Ah.
And some people would, for example, would have relationships where they don't just... They don't want that person mentioned, or indeed, no mention of another relationship. And I would always go on what the couple wants themselves.
Okay, so did I just hear you infer that the way you get through this, which is brilliant, that you actually go through almost maybe word for word with the couple what you're going to say?
Yeah,
brilliant.
I do, Joe.
That's
I do.
A brilliant
yeah.
way of doing
yeah.
it, isn't it?
Yeah. And then we make it beautiful and we make it lighthearted. And some people would say, oh, look, you just want to get in there and get married. But I would always say, look, if you're going to go that far, just have something beautiful, have something funny, have something that your guests can relate to, something that you can relate to.
Have a good,
so
have a good public address system that everyone can hear.
Yes, well, I have one of those too, Joe.
Brilliant, well done. Well,
that's my own.
Well, it's one of the most important
things. Well, it's wonderful,
and
particularly senior couples who are finding love a second time. It's amazing.
But from what you say, you're doing all age groups now.
Oh, yeah, of course. The age isn't relevant. The age isn't relevant.
And what about, I presume same-sex marriages are becoming more common.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to see love expressed regardless of whether it's two guys or two girls or whatever. And we have beautiful ceremonies. And it's lovely to include the families, particularly in the same-sex couple arrangement. The families are there and the parents are there. And it's just wonderful.
Now, does the...
You're celebrating love and it's great.
But, you know, back in the old days, Noel, if it was a priest or a vicar or whatever, the priest was almost forced to go to the wedding and sit at the top table.
That's one of my frequently asked questions, Joe. I send out a couple of the frequently asked questions, and that's one of my questions. You know, do not invite me to the reception.
Brilliant.
Thank
Brilliant.
You very much.
I
am honoured to be asked, but I prefer not to. No, I would never go to.
I often wondered how a padre, obviously a man, how a padre
of
would
course,
feel sitting at the end of the table listening to interminable speeches from half-cut uncles and aunties and fathers and mothers of the bride and brides and... But anyway,
they used to sit there, you know, the housekeepers, and then
of course the priest would have to get up. Well, maybe if the priest got up to dance, Noel.
Oh no, Joe, I've gotten long. I'm a bit too long of a tooth now for all that dancing and stuff. Oh no, yeah. No, I go and do what I have to do, make it as wonderful as possible for the couple, and give them all hugs and kisses and best wishes and leave.
But you specifically say to them, looking forward to doing your wedding and looking forward to our preparation, which seems to be brilliant. But I have no expectation that I'm invited to the...
Oh, no, I would make that very clear. And I meet the couple several times before the wedding anyway, either online, if it doesn't suit me, it's in person. If they're not, you know, I can't meet them in person. And I would always meet the bride before the wedding, and obviously the groom I'd be with anyway in that situation, or the couple. I would always meet them in the hour before the wedding, just to make sure that they're all right and they're happy with everything.
Because the few hours before a wedding can be extraordinarily stressful.
Can be very stressful, Joe. It can. Actually, really, what's happening within a bride-groom situation, the bride has been fussed over, she's having her makeup done, she's having photographs and all that. So the poor old groom then is standing with an arm longer than the other. So I mind the grooms, make sure that they're all right.
Oh, well done. And you know that awful phrase.
Never was
that. You know that awful phrase. I think it originated in the movies Bridezilla. I presume I presume that's completely exaggerated. But do grooms get nervous in a different way?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Well, I hope they don't hit the bottle, do they?
Oh no, green tea. I always advise them to green tea.
You say sit down with a cup of calming green tea.
I'd say go off there now and have a cup of green tea along with your
family. Okay. Then, would you set a time limit on the ceremony? Would you say to them, let's keep it to?
Oh, no, not at all. I wouldn't put a time limit on the ceremony, Joe. But I would say to a couple, now, listen, let's not go overboard on this. You know, we don't have a circus here. You know, we just have something nice and simple. But it would depend on what couples want. Whether they want lots of poetry, lots of music, lots of readings. That's really what extends the ceremony. But I would be guiding them as to what is more or less appropriate time-wise, which is 20 minutes to half an hour maximum time.
Okay. And you're very diplomatic, Noel. And Noel, what did you do? Well, obviously, you've a fascinating life, I'm sure, but is being a wedding celebrant, is it a full-time job or part-time job? Is it?
Oh, no, Joe, I'm retired. I was a nurse. And I'm retired.
A nurse, okay.
So it's part-time, I suppose, at that point of view.
And where were you nursing?
I was in St. Luke's Hospital in Kilkenny. I was a midwife there. I was a public health nurse.
Brilliant.
Well, that's a long time ago, Joe.
That's why your people skills are so brilliant.
Well, look, Joe, I love doing weddings and I love meeting couples, and there's all sorts of couples that you meet. But also, I suppose, I try to guide them. Now, I never impose on a couple of what they should do or what they should say or what I have to say. The only thing that you really have to say in a legal ceremony is the legal wording, which is the exact same for every couple. But I would not impose myself on them. But I would also guide them as to, you know, what things might be appropriate or, you know.
Well done.
That the guests don't get bored and it's a joyous occasion. And to start off the wedding day on a high, walking out from a ceremony.
It
should be beautiful because they're doing an amazing thing, committing to each other. Isn't it wonderful?
Okay, you're brilliant. Have you won soon? Are you doing a wedding soon?
Yes, I have a wedding soon, okay. I had one last weekend as well.
But do you do funerals?
I have done memorial services, yes.
Memorials, okay.
Some people call it celebration of life.
Yeah, of course, ceremonies.
That's a different vibe altogether. It's also quite beautiful.
Yeah, but it's such an honour. Yeah, great, Noel.
If you want to renew your views... Renew your vows.
Yeah.
I'm your woman.
Okay. Well, Cody, below in Kilkenny, available 24/7, 365.
24/7.
And she will never, unlike me, you in terms of your mouth here, me on air, you obviously, Noel, you're so diplomatic, you will never put a foot wrong. Well done. That's Noel Cody, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Congratulations again to Caroline Bracken for her award-winning book of poetry, Boy, Mother, and that award is tomorrow in Cumbria. Niall McManigal on sound, Shane Galvin's broadcast coordinator, Owen McLaughlin, the producer, series producer, Annette Egan, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home this spring with new curtains. Explore our stylish collection now at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.